Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this week, we have Joe Bricco from JT Outdoor Products on the show. And getting to know Joe here for the first time, we talk a little bit about his 20-plus year tournament fishing career, which is pretty impressive. Obviously, some great stories there. We also talk about his custom rod building company and what makes them unique, but also just kind of the bigger picture. I think, you know, for many of us, the question is, you know, looking at these high-end rods, why are they so expensive? What goes into making a rod so expensive? And Joe does a good job kind of explaining in his own words just how extensive the process is to creating a real, true, custom high-end rod. And, you know, I think I really appreciate his explanation in all of this. And yeah, very enjoyable, very educational. So let's get to it. We've got Joe Bricco from JT Outdoor Products. Let's get to it. It's the perfect summer getaway. I'm talking about Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River in the northwest angle. It's a big spot on the map. The perfect scenery includes 14,000 islands. The fishing opportunities are perfect for anglers on every level. It's the walleye capital of the world. Perfect summer fun, resorts, and lodging. It's all waiting for you. Families and corporate groups are welcome too. Come see for yourself. Better yet, come fish for yourself. If you need help, there's charter boats and fishing guides. The magic of Lake of the Woods is waiting to be discovered by you. For more details, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy Kit. Their Eye Candy Kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the Eye Candy Kit. Joe Bricco, first time on, man. I appreciate it. Dude, where are you from? Where did you get introduced to fishing, man?
So my story... So I grew up in Lakeville, Minnesota, and really where I got my start was really paddling a canoe around in the Boundary Waters. My dad didn't have a boat when I was growing up, so we would do annual Boundary Waters trips, and we'd do two a year. We'd do Memorial and Labor Day, and I think I've been to almost every entry point in the Boundary Waters. So we would paddle and carry everything with us and camp. And you know, I would look forward to our Boundary Waters trips, you know, more than Christmas. So, you know, as a kid, I mean, I would just count down the days to those two trips. So, and with that, and we'll get to this, you know, later in the podcast, that's really where I kind of fell in love with fishing rods too. Since a real young age, I've always been enamored with fishing rods. And I would always Sunday after church go to, at the time around here, it was Burger Brothers, and I would, you know, look at the latest Fenwicks and, you know, drool over fishing rods. So I don't know. I think I was just born with an absolute passion for fishing. And, you know, my start was really on those Boundary Water trips with my dad and brother. And it was always a multi-species thing. We'd never go after one particular species. It was always, you know, a lot of pike naturally, because you're just pounding the bank. You know, limited amount of electronics, if any, actually really none at that time. And, you know, catching smallmouth bass, and we'd catch a few walleyes, and which ironically, I'm a tournament walleye angler now, but, you know, it's not really what I grew up chasing. It was a multi-species thing. And I do pride myself on being a really good multi-species angler, because I spent so many years doing it. So that was my upbringing. Ended up going to college in North Dakota, which is just an unbelievable place to go to college for an outdoorsman. You know, as far as the hunting and fishing opportunities, I mean, it's, you know, it's world class. So when I was in college, I was strategically setting my classes to be on Tuesdays and Thursdays, just so I could be either on Upper Red Lake during the winter in my ice house that I had out there, or, you know, in the summer or spring, I'd be on Devil's Lake, and, you know, I'd be chasing all over the state with buddies. So that's, it's kind of the quick elevator speech of my upbringing.
Was there a turning point for you? Were you exposed to something? Did you become a fan of tournaments in some way?
Yeah, I really did in my hometown. And ironically, I started out fishing some bass tournaments, and that was when I was still in high school. So that would have been like late 90s. And I've fished a tournament, you know, ever since I was introduced to it. I'm highly competitive. I played hockey growing up and baseball, and I've always, you know, just been driven by competition. So when I was exposed to some tournament fishing, just, you know, small, you know, local tournaments, you know, around Lakeville, which are bass tournaments, you know, it just is so much more exciting to catch a fish during a tournament than a non-tournament for me, because it's the competitor in me. So I was really exposed to it then. And then got introduced to walleye fishing actually a little bit later. It was when I was in high school by a high school friend. He had a cabin on Lake Vermilion, which is, you know, just a walleye paradise. I mean, kind of in the similar vein of, you know, Lake of the Woods or those, you know, those up north, you know, walleye factory, you know, lakes. So right away I fell in love with that. Didn't do a lot of specifically targeting walleyes growing up. So once I was introduced to that, I was immediately hooked on that being, you know, the species of my choice. So then I went out to NDSU for college. And when I was in college, I was looking at tournaments, and I started doing some walleye tournaments when I was in college. And I've been fishing walleye tournaments ever since that time. So my first one I fished was in 2001. So this will be my 23rd year of walleye fishing tournaments.
You know, I kind of want to talk about some of your recent tournaments. You've had some success. I mean, you've been doing this for 23 years. Lots of successful stories, I imagine. But maybe a little bit of your progression with maybe some of the successes and things that you were figuring out. Maybe some fun stories or meaningful experiences there.
Yeah, absolutely. And the sport has evolved so much. I mean, it's no secret with all the, you know, talk of live scope, but, you know, in 23 years, you see a lot of advancements. I mean, I think way back to the early years and, you know, got to see, you know, something as simple as down scan being introduced and side scan. And, right around then, mapping was becoming a thing. So, you know, really the years go by so fast and you kind of blink, and before you know it, you're, you know, in it for 23 years, and you think back to, you know, the progression and how much it's changed is really, you know, remarkable. But I mean, that to me is kind of the most compelling thing with being around for 23 years. But I got started fishing tournaments just because I wanted to be a better angler. I didn't get into it because I was like, man, I want to go try to, you know, make some money. I did it because I'm like, I think if I fish some tournaments, I'm going to learn a lot from the other anglers. It's going to push me to educate myself more. I'm competitive. So if there's money on the line, any downtime, I'm either going to be deep into, you know, reading books or watching videos or trying to network or talk to other people. And, For me, it was a long time before I actually cashed a check. It took me a long time. So, you know, people think they want to tournament fish and they have set really high expectations for themselves, but you got to learn how to compete. I mean, tournament fishing is a very, very different mindset. You know, a lot of fishermen look at it for, you know, to relax and kind of get away. And tournament fishing is not that. I mean, for us, I mean, winds are sometimes, you know, they're not pretty. You gotta fish, you know, out of your comfort zone and out of your strengths. And you have to do what it takes to win. And doing what it takes to win isn't always the funnest approach. So it's tournament angling is different. I tell everyone, you know, be real cautious on getting into it. Make sure that you have a really deep-rooted passion for it, because, you know, once you catch the bug of tournament angling, it becomes a little bit hard to go fish for fun, to be honest. I do very little of it. And that's how I grew up. You know, like I said, boundary waters and paddling around and portaging into lakes and just wanting to see the next lake or around the corner and, you know, catch five different species in a trip. Now it's, if I'm not fishing with money on the line or the, you know, adrenaline of catching a big fish on tourney day, it's a little bit more difficult to get up for doing it.
It seems like you're doing some of your best fishing right now. I mean, just, you know, some of your recent accolades are right up there. Like, how would you say, what has been some of your key to success in that regard, as far as longevity? Like, I think that's another tricky thing to balance. Cause it's not like you're a full-time tournament angler. You have a business and all that stuff. So, I mean, how do you do it? How do you stay good? What's kind of your recipe for success?
Yeah, it's an excellent, you know, question. And yeah, I'm asked that, you know, a lot, whether I'm on stage or whatever. And we've been real blessed in the last, I'd say 6 years have been pretty unbelievable. We'll be fishing our fifth AIM National Championship here coming up, actually in your neck of the woods here on Sakakawea. Been fortunate enough to win some MWCs, so it's been the last 6 years have been great. But you know, back to your original question, really we feel like we will outwork everybody. So meaning not just on the water, but it's being detailed with your equipment, and it's taking the extra step, doing something like always having fresh line. Having your tackle really organized, having rigging your own boats to make sure that you're not going to have any technical problems, and you know how to troubleshoot any kind of an issue, and just top to bottom, high level of detail, and then just, you know, a winner's mindset. You got to believe that you can win on every single day. And to do that, you gotta put in more time. And I'll tell you, my tournament partner and I, and my teammates, we run with six of us. It's I really consider it a well-oiled machine. And in practice, everybody, you know, is very transparent, and we all work our tails off. I mean, when we show up to pre-fish, I mean, there's no screwing around. I mean, it's sun up, sun down. And when you get in after a 12-hour day, it's not kick back and, you know, grab a beer right away. It's okay, we know the process here. It's going to be a 1-hour download, and we're going to share every last detail, you know, before, you know, anything takes place. So it's just, you know, it's tournament fishing is a process like anything else. And once you figure out the proven process and you stick to it and you make it a routine, success, you know, generally follows. And LiveScope has been a big part of that. I kind of consider ourselves early adopters, because we're going on year five, and it's, you know, nowadays I would say most of the field has, you know, some type of forward facing sonar, whatever brand it may be. But I'll tell you, when we first started utilizing it, you know, full time, not just here and there during the day, and 100% running it all day as the primary tool, we were you know, maybe a small percentage that were doing that.
I think there's a lot to take away there. Like, I don't think that the conversation around being a hard worker should ever, like, be dead. You know, I think that, you know, first and foremost, some of those intangibles of just, you know, being dedicated and committed and having, you know, to everything. And then that kind of bleeds into, I feel like, you know, the bigger, like, forward sonar conversation. I've, you know, some of the best forward sonar conversations I've had on here or just on the street, it's just, I can recognize the people that are having the most success with it are just hard workers in general, even without it. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I imagine you feel that way too. Like, you've been tournament fishing, you've seen, you know, your own success and the success of other people. It's not to become better at fishing or decide one day that, you know, fishing is a strong passion of yours and you're just looking for information and you're trying to get better. almost never is it just a piece of information going to put fish in your boat, or a piece of technology is going to just put fish in your boat if you're not already kind of having, you know, just like a dedicated or a committed individual.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the right head. And that's, you know, that's what we say every time. What is it? I mean, a lot of people have the tools, but it's really about your dedication and just good old fashioned, you know, grind it out, you know. And I think that's one of our uniques. I know there's a lot of people that, you know, say they work hard, or, you know, it's, you gotta be a next level hard worker. And really, I say this often, and, you know, it might get taken, you know, the wrong way to some, but you really gotta hate losing more than you love winning. And that might sound a little bit crazy, but it's just, you gotta just have an absolute warrior, you know, mentality, because what a warrior mentality is going to do is it's going to get you out there in not so ideal conditions, in practice. And you're still going to grind out a 10 to 12 hour day. It doesn't matter if it's sideways rain, you're still going to do it with the same type of drive and commitment, because you have to, you know, you have to be willing to outwork the next guy. You know, in the circuits that we fish, everybody is pretty good. If you put them on fish and they're biting, they're going to catch them. So it ends up being real small things that you might, you know, pick up in practice, or just have an additional rods tied up for, you know, your plan B and C, so you're not, you know, wasting a, you know, some critical time. And that comes back to that, you know, that preparation and, you know, pushing through, being prepared for the next day when, you know, the other tournament anglers, you know, they're worn out from getting beat around all day. And the last thing they want to do is, you know, tie up a bunch of different rods for something they figured out. You know, they'll say, oh, we'll wait to do it in the morning. Well, you just lost an hour. That's a critical hour. So it's top to bottom, you know, dedication, everything from the amount of hours you put in to being real detailed with, you know, with your equipment and going the extra mile with being prepared.
Do you feel like you have a style, like there's a style to your fishing, or do you just do a little bit of everything good? Like, if someone was to ask you what kind of angler you are, how would you say that?
Our strength now is, you know, big bodies of water, lakes, are our strength, and then utilizing, you know, forward-facing sonar is definitely our strong suit. So looking for, you know, suspended fish and covering a lot of ground, and using speed to our advantage. So we power fish, and our, you know, our philosophy is only a certain percent of fish are going to be biters. So don't waste your time on the non-biting fish. I think Jason Mitchell, I heard something recently. He's like, yeah, a forward facing sonar is changing, you know, the old philosophy that, you know, don't leave fish to find fish. And he was spot on. That is our philosophy. Leave them and leave them right away. If they don't want to bite, go find one that is. So that is definitely, you know, our strength is utilizing speed and efficiency, and just getting our baits in front of as many fish as we can.
Northland Fishing Tackle has revolutionized the soft plastic market for walleye anglers when they came up with Eye Candy. The soft, limber action, the stretch and durability, the ability to absorb scent, those are just a few of the reasons that make Eye Candy so desirable for walleye anglers. If you're looking to get your hands on some Eye Candy for the first time, or you're looking to stock up, Northland Fishing Tackle has made shopping easy with their Eye Candy kit. Their Eye Candy kit comes with over 100 pieces of eye candy, an assortment of colors, and all the different styles that they offer. I'm talking about the grub, the jig crawler, the night crawler, the minnow, and the paddle shad. They even throw in a pack of tungsten jigs. Check out the link in the description of this podcast to check out the Eye Candy kit. It's the perfect summer getaway. I'm talking about Minnesota's Lake of the Woods, the Rainy River, and the Northwest Angle. It's a big spot on the map. The perfect scenery includes 14,000 islands. The fishing opportunities are perfect for anglers on every level. It's the walleye capital of the world. Perfect summer fun, resorts, and lodging. It's all waiting for you. Families and corporate groups are welcome too. Come see for yourself. Better yet, come fish for yourself. If you need help, there's charter boats and fishing guides. The magic of Lake of the Woods is waiting to be discovered by you. For more details, go to lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Efficiency and forward sonar, I think, you know, I was having this conversation recently, but I feel like efficiency and forward sonar don't necessarily go hand in hand, especially right away when you get it. Like any angler that gets forward sonar, it's a, there's sort of like a journey that you have to take with it. I know I'm on that journey right now. I just got it. Last year was like my first year with forward sonar in the boat all year. And I don't get out to fish nearly as much as you guys. So that's what I take a lot away from this part of this conversation. But like, how do you become efficient with forward sonar, especially on big bodies of water when you got to cover water? I mean, a lot of people would say, you know, high speed graphing or, you know, pulling cranks at in the summertime at, you know, 2-3 miles an hour or more. You know, you're going to cover a lot more water. You're going to sample more water. You're going to see more things. How do you be efficient with utilizing forward sonar as much as you can and still breaking down big water?
Yeah, that's a great question. It can be a big distraction to be honest, because you'll find that you mark so many fish. I mean, some of these lakes are so full of fish. So sometimes early on in the learning curve, and I'll tell you, the learning curve is very steep. I think a lot of the perception out there, it isn't. You buy this thing, you plug it in, it shows everything perfectly. You watch the bait go in the fish's mouth. That's not it at all. I mean, it takes a high level of skill to utilize it correctly. And you really got to be able to interpret, what it's showing you. You got to get good at telling, sizes. The fisherman in you wants to throw a bait at everything because you see them right there. You see them moving. But you have to learn to interpret what it's telling you and be efficient with just throwing at the fish you want to. Now, whether it's a fish that you've identified that's in a certain part of the water column that's just, more apt to bite, there's definitely that. We're getting good enough where we're starting to tell the shapes of fish, piker in a lot of these lakes, seeing how they move and react and not sitting there, trying to get a pike to bite thinking it's a walleye, cause that's a big, time suck. And then just looking at the number of fish, if you're fishing for big fish, they're not going to be in a school, a real large school. They're not going to be in, 20 to 25, and you gotta overlook the fishermen and all of us, and you see those fish and it's so tempting that you want to throw at everything, and you can waste a lot of time throwing it at some of the wrong stuff. So the learning curve is steep. I think where people fail a bit is they try to introduce it into their game plan sporadically during the day. And it's really something that you got to 100% use it or fish, more traditionally and not try to toggle back and forth is, one of the pieces of advice I would have. You got to marry it and you got to go for it. So that's how you get over the learning curve, because you start to learn a lot when you 100% dedicate to it.
I mean, there's still opportunities to win a tournament without it, right? I mean, there's still scenarios where, you gotta either be without it, or there's times where you gotta be out of your comfort zone doing something else or fishing old school. I mean, there's still a time and a place for all those things. You got some stories for us that, could maybe contrast some of this conversation?
Yeah, and that's... You hear a lot of, the buzz and the bantering, back and forth that, oh, it's, playing video games. And if it wasn't for these younger kids that could play video games, they're actually not real good fishermen. But I guess I would argue, that point kind of all day long. For me personally, I've really cashed as many checks without it as I have, with it. And that's probably just the amount of years that I fished without, forward facing sonars. So, we won AIM tournaments. We won, We won a state championship on Vermilion, and the live scope wasn't even a thing yet. So, you know, that's where I would, I guess, argue that point. It's like any other tool, and you do still have to, you still have to get the fish to eat. So you still need to be, you know, a good fisherman. You got to present, you know, baits in the right way. And, you know, your boat control becomes, you know, absolutely, you know, critical, because you got to be able to position right to make that perfect cast of those fish. So, I would say it's, you know, one thing that we talk about as a team is it really tests your accuracy of your cast, where in the past you were kind of blind casting. You didn't have to be, as precise when you're fishing a big flat. You're kind of making the next cast. But now that you can see them, I mean, you have to make a very precise cast and know what a 60-foot, you know, cast is, and be able to hit that fish. So it's added that dynamic of that skill set, you know, into the mix. And there's a ton of hand-eye coordination, where traditional fishing didn't bring as much of that forward, because now you're running the deucer on a trolling motor, running it on a pole, now you're doing multiple things. The boat is moving, the fish is moving, you're trying to make maybe a crosswind, you know, cast and hit that, you know, perfectly. So there is a high level of skill. We kind of joke occasionally that, you know, some of the best live scope fishermen were some of the best athletes in high school, because you have so much going on that there is some athleticism, which, you know, people might, you know, they might laugh at that comment too and think it's ridiculous. But I tell you, when you're out in waves, and, you know, you're standing up and not resting, and you're trying to, you know, hit a fish that's on the move and the boat is, you know, sliding in four footers, take some athleticism. Trust me.
Yeah, I imagine. We're the better part through April. You've already fished some tournaments. Let's talk about that a little bit. You had some success already this year. What was that? Tell me that tournament story.
Yeah, that's a great example to the point you just brought up. Our strength is live scope fishing, and we use it everywhere that we possibly can. And we just won a tournament down on the Mississippi River on pool 3 and 4 for the first AIM Pro Walleye Series stop of the year, and had to get out of our strength and out of our comfort zone. And we didn't use live scope for 1 minute and went down there and won the tournament. So had to go dig deep into the old days of walking a trout stream and looking at current seams and, you know, reading the river with your eyes. And we were able to do that. It's a stop that's usually not very good for us. I struggle on the rivers, but we were able to make it happen by, you know, going old school and finding a real nice current seam and waiting them out, and the right fish, you know, moved into that area, and we were able to pop two of the right fish, you know, to get the job done. Actually weighed my biggest fish in tournament competition at a 30 3/4. So I've caught a lot of 29s and a lot of fish just shy of 30 inches on tournament day. But this was my first over 30 on game day. And I never thought that would happen without the use of a forward facing sonar with, you know, where we are, you know, in our journey or our career. But we were able to just do that, to go down the river and go back to the roots and the basics and read the river and find a tight little good looking seam with an eddy back area and get the job done. So that was pretty exciting.
Did you know those fish were there? Like, was it a good pre-fish? Like, tell me, I mean, you know, I know you tournament guys don't want to share everything. I'm not asking for all them secrets, but I do like kind of, you know, hearing them stories of, like, you know, how did pre-fish go? You know, was it tough? You kind of got it narrowed down to one spot. I mean, what's the story?
Yeah. So really the pre-fish was not great. So down on pool four right now, there's some pre-spawn and some post-spawn fish. So what happens is they start making their way out of Lake Pepin, and they spawn in a number of areas, but the primary area that they spawn is up by the dam. So pool four, lock and dam number four. So with all those fish, you know, moving, you know, to do the spawn, really, really hard to predict them. I mean, they'll be in one area for, you know, an hour, and then they'll be gone. So you can imagine how difficult that makes, pre-fishing and putting together a game plan. So whether they're coming into spawn, they're moving. And then if they're done spawning, I mean, they're on the move again. A lot of times they just dump their eggs and then they're on the move. So it's really, really hard to predict and pattern the moving fish in a river like that. So we went down there to pre-fish, and we found some fish at the dam, and we figured that was going to be a good fallback. It's super community. I mean, there's all the weekend guys are in there. Local guys are in there. A lot of the tournament fishermen know that that's kind of the bus stop instead of trying to fish the bus route. So it's no secret. So really we wanted to figure out if we could first off, you know, get bit there as a fallback and then start to, you know, expand and maybe find some more off the wall stuff. Our hope was to, you know, find something where we'd be away from boats. And, you know, we ran out of time. We couldn't find anything consistent that was going to work away from the dam. So we woke up that day and knew that we were going to have to, you know, go combat fish, essentially, where you got, you know, where you have boats that, you know, you could touch them with your rod tip. And we're like, well, this is out of our comfort zone, and this is not our style, but, you know, it's the best thing that we have going, and we're going to have to suck it up, and we're going to have to go grind within that. And we did. I mean, we caught a lot of those fish that we caught, the big ones especially. I mean, other people could have netted them. So,
oh, man.
It's not my favorite way to fish, I'll be honest. You know, we're used to, you know, being on, you know, Lake of the Woods, where you barely see another boat, or, you know, Lake Vermilion, where, you know, you see one or two other boats, or Leech Lake, or, you know, where we figure something out that's, you know, ours, and we have big areas to move around and do our thing. So this was completely opposite of our strength and our style.
Was it a live bait deal?
No, it wasn't. Blade baits are a big thing down there, just to get that reaction bite with the pre-spawn. And then we used some jigging spoons, actually. So we were switching up between those two. So, and I don't use a lot of blades either. I mean, I own some, so I had to learn the right ones and the right color. And a local guy, fortunately enough, makes them down there, and I was able to get with him ahead of time, and, you know, get the right colors and the right sizes. And, you know, I stocked up on about 100 of them. So
nice.
I went from not being a blade fisherman to having, you know, 100 essentially. So, but that's what you have to do. You know, you got to figure out what's working, and you got to go all in on it. So that's how we were able to get it done. So great start to the year. We went down there just hoping to get some decent points on a stop that traditionally isn't real good for us. So we were hoping to get good points. This year is a little bit unique because we qualified for Cabela's national team championship, which is going to be on Lake Erie second weekend of May. And because of that, we can't go to one of the four single day aim events, which means we lose our drop. So we went into the weekend this past weekend and we're like, well, we got to try to break the river curse here. And we're going to have to get a little bit gritty and figure out, you know, how the locals do this. And we're going to have to fish like them, because we've been down there before and we tried to do it our way. And we try to get away from people and find an off the wall and try to use, you know, live scope. And we've fumbled pretty bad in the past. And so we had to adapt this time.
Yeah. And you know, kind of the explanation on that with the AIM series for like the end of the year, the team of the year points, you can drop one of your, like, your worst finish, right? That's kind of how you describe that, is like you have your regular season and everybody that fished them all, or, you know, everybody that gets to the end there, you can shed off your worst finish. So if you're going to miss one for the national team championship, that just automatically becomes the one you got to get rid of. So yeah, that makes a bunch of sense. Well, that's a good deal. I mean, yeah, like that's, I mean, I imagine, you know, that's a great success story. I imagine after this many years of doing it, you got plenty of stories where it didn't work out like that, but it's more fun to talk about the ones where you got those magical bites. So nice work on that, man. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah.
I, you know, we could talk fishing a bunch, and I'll have to have you back on, but one of the things, having you on, I want to hear more. So this will be a hard pivot into this, but I want to hear more about your business, your rod business. I've never really had a full conversation on here whatsoever about, you know, rod making. I've never had, you know, the custom rod business is such a popular thing nowadays. There's so many rods out there to choose from, and I get write-ins all the time. You know, people asking about, you know, have somebody on to talk about custom rod building and what goes into it. And obviously there's a big, you know, for a lot of people, you know, these rods are so expensive nowadays. They cost so much money. Like, you know, what all goes into that? Why are they so expensive? I would like to hear more of that from you, how you got into, you know, the business, and describe it a little bit, and then maybe help us, give us some of that back, you know, sort of that behind the scenes kind of conversation about what goes into building a custom rod these days.
Sure. Yeah. So kind of taking it, you know, back to the beginning, how JT Outdoor Products started. When I was in college, I was messing around with buddies on a product that we now call the Hot Box. And that's really the start of JT Outdoor Products. That's how and why we started the business. And what that is, it's a propane heated, really think of it as a tip up or a hole heater. So I don't know if you've ever seen one before, but
Oh yeah, I have.
So that was my first product. So in college with my fishing buddies, we were taking and creating wood boxes, and we were integrating lanterns into them. And we first started off with, you know, trying to use candles, and quickly realized that that had limitations. Then we tried some charcoal, and that was, you know, kind of a pain because you're dragging around dirty charcoal. So then we're like, man, we gotta figure out a way for some more consistent heat to try to, you know, keep the holes open. The nice part about North Dakota is you get more lines in the winter than we do here in Minnesota. So, you know, expanding your footprint obviously increases your catch rate. So, you know, being competitive for me, it's always like, yeah, when I go out, you know, ice fishing, I want to try to catch as many as possible. And, you know, to do that, I want to expand my footprint and try to create some kind of unique advantage. So I started messing around with this and going through all these different prototypes. And my dad is an engineer, has a bunch of patents under his name, and is just really good at product development. And he was watching what I was doing at college. He's kind of watching from a distance and, you know, kind of helping me, give me some ideas on how we could make these basically garage operations work. And I did that for a number of years, and we had a ton of success with them. They were kind of clunky, and they're real, you know, crude looking, but they worked. I mean, they flat out increased our catch rate every time we'd go out. If I would take someone new, they'd be like, those Hot Boxes they're unbelievable. I mean, this is, you're catching all your fish on these. I mean, I can't imagine not having them now. I mean, it gets you away from the noise. They sit there, they'll keep the hole open for 30 some hours. You don't have to, you know, trip a mechanism like you do with a tip up where you get a tension change. So it's, they really are just absolutely killer. So my dad was watching this, and after I graduated from college, he's like, you know, with all the people that have told you that you need to take this thing to market, don't you think it's a time to maybe look at this a little bit harder and figure out how we can refine it and figure out how to get it presentable? And we did it. We took and started creating, you know, prototypes that, you know, could fold up, and introducing aluminum instead of wood, putting ice cube tray material on the bottom so they wouldn't freeze in, and putting, you know, all them tweaks on it to get it, you know, really, really refined, and did that for a number of years. And once we had that thing, you know, absolutely perfected, we started JT Outdoor Products, and that was 2014. So that's actually the product that got me started, and that led me into rod building.
And hold on, what does JT stand for?
It's actually my name and my dad. So Joe and Tom. So JT, my dad and I own the company together. And when we started this, it was just, we thought it was just going to be this hot box, really. But there was one unique to it that created really opened the door, you know, into rod building. So I mentioned earlier in the podcast that I think I was born with a passion for fishing rods, just always been enamored, always drooling over, you know, all the different, you know, makes and models. So it was definitely, you know, a part of who I was. So I was actually doing some TV shows with the hot box, because it's really a great product for TV, because it's, you know, it's new, it's cutting edge, it's doing, you know, things that you traditionally, you know, couldn't do. I mean, you'd be fishing at, you know, 30 below zero, and the hole is wide open. So it was good for TV. And I was actually doing a Next Bite TV show, and some of the guys were like, man, it would be an absolute home run if you introduce fishing rods into this, because what's unique about the product is that half of the top is open. It remains open because when we first started using it, we'd use like a rattle reel on it. So the top had to be open, and because of the design of it and some insulation and the aluminum, I mean, you can create enough heat with the top being open to keep that hole open at, I mean, we've actually tested down to minus 40 and kept the hole open. So that lended itself to being able to introduce fishing rods along with this system. So that's actually where the snare rod was born. We were filming a show up in the UP, and there was a super finicky perch bite where you basically had to dead stick a rod. If you moved it or jigged it or did anything, I mean, they'd basically be scared of it. So I set off on trying to build the perfect dead stick rod, which is now called our snare rod. So that was the first rod that I built, and it was really to marry up with the hot box product. So that's how rods got started for me. That was sometime around 2016.
I mean, if you built your first ice rod in 2016-ish, you've come a long ways, man. So what do you offer today?
Yeah, it took off, you know, fast, and it's, you know, it really goes down to once you figure out a process, you can start to scale on that process. It's really just, you know, figuring something out the first time, and then that opened doors into a full lineup of ice rods. Everything from, you know, our dead stick rods. We make a walleye snare version, a panfish snare. We got ultra light crappie rods with titanium spring bobber tips built in, all the way up to, you know, lake trout rods, tonne of walleye rods, and then a full lineup of summer rods. So it expanded fast. I started, you know, creating multiple, you know, models at once, and everyone asked, so Joe, what's your unique? How are your rods different than, you know, any other rod that I can go grab off the shelf anywhere? And that's really the story that I love to tell the most. So being a tournament fisherman, you know, selfishly, what I wanted to do is create a rod that would give me an advantage. So I wasn't looking at it like, how do I create a mid-level rod, pull a bunch of cost out of it, have some margin in there, and try to make a little bit of money. I looked at it and said, I'm going to try to create the best rod that I possibly can to help me selfishly win tournaments. So that's always been the mission and the foundation of JT Outdoor Products, is to create something that's going to give the angler an advantage. So at the time I was actually using G. Loomis NRXs, which, you know, I perceived as being, you know, really the best, you know, rod I could, you know, get my hands on at the time. And I looked at it and I said, how do I make something equal to this or better, you know, at a better price point. So that's where I got started on the summer rods, really used that as a basis for design. So I started researching, you know, what kind of carbon fibers are they using, what kind of guides, what kind of handles, what makes it so special. And, you know, looking at things as detailed as, where's the balance point on this rod, and how do you balance a rod perfectly? Cause that matters. I mean, if you don't have a rod that's balanced and you're sitting there all day and you're holding up, you know, 20, 30% of that tip weight that wants to fall forward, it's not going to be as sensitive. It's not going to be as good of a tool. So that's some of the fine detail things that we're looking at. And then more importantly, what I did is I built a large staff. So we have 80 staff members on our pro team. We have Hall of Fame anglers. We have legendary guides. I just tried to surround myself with the best of the best in the industry, from tournament to guide anglers. And I leaned on them. I just said, where's the voids in the market? What kind of technique specific rod is not available out there? Because again, going back to our mission of why I started the company, I wanted to create things that gave really tournament anglers and guides an advantage, made them better fishermen. So that's our unique is the engineering, you know, within the blanks. So most rod builders will they'll find an off the shelf blank, one that exists. They'll take and put pretty wraps on it, and you know, maybe put their name on it, and you know, call it a custom rod. What we do is we put our time, energy, resources, and the strength of the team into developing the load curves of our rod blanks. So what we'll do is we design all of them from a scratch piece of paper. So every single rod blank is proprietary to JT Outdoor Products, and I'm leaning on my staff of guys to tell me exactly what that load curve needs to be. So one of the most unspoken things is matching a load curve of a rod to a certain lure. So what we're doing is we're looking at the technique, whether it's a quarter ounce jig, a glide bait, and deciding with our team and engineering that blank to work perfectly for the weight of that bait. And that we found that out over the years, that matching a certain weight of a lure to that rod blank, you know, is the magic.
There's a lot. That's a heavy sort of thought process there that makes so much sense. Being technique specific, I think, you know, it was probably more popular, or still is really popular, in that more intermediate, or the cheaper rods out there, the more just, you know, factory type rods, that they're all like species specific, like get a walleye rod, mm-hmm. get a yeah. panfish rod, get a ultralight, or get a medium action rod, and then maybe a little bit of length. You know, people have length preferences, but like, you know, that a more utility rod to be that bang for your buck, what everybody's strategy was for yep. broad appeal. But for you to come in and be like, I want to look at the techniques, Because that's a really evolving thing, right? I mean, and I think it goes to show you guys come out with new stuff, it seems like, you know, lately all the time. Like, the techniques are what's super popular out there, man. Tell me a little bit about that. That's a huge...
Yeah, and that's, you know, our mission or our model is exactly opposite of trying to create a Swiss Army knife fishing rod. We actually pride ourselves on not doing that. It's very, you know, very technique specific, but because you can't make a rod that does everything. If you make a rod that's going to cover a wide array of techniques, it's just okay at all of those, really. And, you know, going back to, you know, creating that advantage, you know, it has to be very, very technique specific. So we're looking at, you know, I'll just take the Black Reins, for example. I mean, we looked at that 6.9 for glide bait. So number 7, number 9 jigging wraps, you know, shiver minnows. And we're like, okay, how do we make the absolute perfect, you know, glide bait rod? And it's been really, you know, fascinating, you know, in the process of designing, you know, blanks on how much it actually matters. So really, if I just took one of them Swiss Army rods and tried to do what I do on game day, I would be incredibly frustrated. It's not just the fisherman. It is the tool that's in your hand. And I'll tell you 100% guarantee, if you have a rod that's perfectly matched for the technique that you're doing, you are going to be more successful because you're able to put the perfect cadence into that bait. You get the right amount of tip deflection to either have that J-wrap, you know, hop or take a, you know, accelerated, you know, jump because it was the right amount of flex. Or if you're throwing a light jig and you get, you know, enough whip in that tip where you can put that into the jig, it's a world of difference.
Getting back to the expense of it all, that's always a question, or even just people on the street. I'm sure you hear that stuff all the time, you know, but just, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, willing to save up and buy stuff, you know, that they know about. You know, you think about the cost of electronics. I mean, even in a intermediate level boat, you know, people spend money on electronics and everything that we have in tackle and all this stuff. I feel like the price point is almost less, you know, the conversation. People just want to know about it. People just want to know what they're spending their money on. I mean, you know, they think about all the crankbaits out there that cost $25. You know, people are buying them, but definitely, like, when you kind of understand the technology and all the know-how and everything that goes into it, and then just the, you know, the integrity of the materials, people will buy that stuff. But I still get those questions a lot, and I find the rod business to be a very interesting one. What would your explanation be, you know, at least on your behalf, or just, you know, when these rods are really expensive, what all goes into that to make a rod, you know, $300?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, if I put myself in the shoes of a consumer, it's, you know, and it's a common question. Well, why should I spend more money? And, you know, there's so much marketing that goes on out there. And a lot of the big companies, they do a great job of marketing. But I can tell you firsthand, they're not utilizing, you know, Hall of Fame anglers and legendary guides to figure out how to create the perfect load curve for that technique. And frankly, maybe they don't have to. You know, they can create a rod, they can, you know, make a really attractive, you know, label for it, put some pretty, you know, colored wraps on it. And it, you know, it's hard to know the engineering that goes into it. Frankly, a lot of people don't know. I mean, they're just like, if I spend more and I do get a technique specific rod, what does that actually, you know, do for me? But I can tell you with certainty, it matters. I mean, if you use a properly balanced rod that has the highest end carbon fibers, you know, available, you use, you know, like titanium recoil guides, which we do, which reduces a whole bunch of weight. We use a real seat handle that has a carbon fiber insert, so you're directly transferring that energy from that carbon fiber piece right through the blank for more feel. It's all those little details that, you know, people really need to learn about. And then their eyes are really opened. They're like, wow, well, I do get it. There is additional things from right from the design of knowing that I'm buying a rod for eighth to, you know, quarter ounce jigs that's going to be absolutely matched, you know, for that technique. And then I get the highest possible, you know, components, you know, put on that rod. Once they hear the story and understand it, really price doesn't become much of a conversation anymore. It's you look at the value, you know, it's really value-based selling at that point. So, you know, price becomes a little bit irrelevant.
How long does it take you to come out? I mean, with some of the rods you come out with recently, some of these better rods, like, what's the process from, you know, what's like the origin story to completion of some of your better rods?
Yeah, that's a big part of our story too, because I do lean heavily on staff. They do all my prototyping, and, you know, a lot of them give me a hard time. They're like, geez, you've been prototyping that thing for 2 years. Are you ever going to release it? And the answer is, well, no, not till it's perfect. That's the way it has to be. So there's all kinds of rods that never hit the market. I mean, I got a back room full of ideas that were going to be home runs that weren't. They never came to fruition. So we'll spend, I'd say on average, I mean, we're prototyping for, you know, a year and a half or more. I mean, I'll go through 6, 7, 8, you know, revisions to just to ensure that everything is perfect on that, because, you know, it's one of the faults that I'll point out of, you know, a lot of the big companies, they don't go through that. And I do have inside knowledge of that. I mean, we got staff members that came from that. They were like, they never asked my input and they never did any testing. But again, maybe they don't have to, and good for them. But for us, it's making sure that our customers are not beta testers.
Yeah, I think those stories and some of those explanations are meaningful for a lot of people, because, you know, this day and age, we are looking to maximize our time on the water. You don't have to be a tournament angler. I imagine the majority of your clientele aren't, right? I mean, not everybody's a tournament angler, but when we only get so much time on the water, you know, it's easy to realize that. You only get so much time on the water. You work hard all week and you know, you want to take your family fishing, or you want to go fishing with your buddies, or you want to take, you know, your fishing as serious as you can. That gives people a good explanation to go out and, you know, if they're looking at a rod, you know, whether it's a JT or any kind of rod, I don't mind saying that. It's like, you know, you know what you're looking for, you know, look into those companies and just, you know, take a look at those rods. When you're in the store and you feel them in your hand, like, are they doing that? Do they give you that feel? Do they give you those warm fuzzies? I think that's all the things that we're looking for, you know, when we're looking to have nice stuff. But anything else that pops in your head that we should cover on some of these topics, or anything that we can wait till next time?
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I could, you know, talk until, you know, sun up tomorrow. But yeah. I mean, there's a ton of topics, and I mean, I just think of a few things that, you know, people, you know, often, you know, ask me, whether it's, you know, messenger buddies, and I always get the, how in the heck do you do it? Because, you know, JT is one of my four, you know, full-time jobs, really. And people don't realize this. And, you know, and it's, I say this just because it's, you know, it's a commonly, you know, asked question. They're like, well, how many different things are you doing? It's kind of interesting. So a lot of people don't realize that, you know, I have a full-time job. So I'm the vice president of sales at a company called Range Systems. And we build live fire training facilities, commercial ranges, U.S. Special Forces, law enforcement. Delivered these products and these facilities all over the world. And that's a unique story in itself, because, being a ballistic equipment manufacturer is not something you hear about every day. And people say, wow, that's actually enough of a business to actually, make something of it. And, you know, we have 45 employees. I mean, it's a big, big operation. And so that's what I do by day, which is, it's intriguing for a lot of people. They're like, wow, guns by day and fishing rods by night and hockey coach and tournament fisherman. And, that's kind of, one of my uniques is balancing, all those different things. And I tell you, the most important of all four of my jobs is developing my two daughters in hockey. So that one takes first and foremost. That one is the most important to me, and then it's then it's the day job, and then it's believe it or not, it's tournament fishing and JT. So it's prioritizing, and a lot of people say, how do you fit all that in? And it's amazing how many things you can actually get done if you just stay focused and you're dedicated. And so that's one of the things that people don't really know about me.
Yeah. You got to be able to delegate some of that stuff. And I think, I think that, your pro staff and the fact that you lean heavily on those guys is huge. I hear that all the time in the industry, people that you run into, when you see companies come and go, maybe they have really good ideas or just, certain people are just so passionate, but they can't, they want to be in control of everything and they want to make all their decisions. And, being able to delegate that responsibility, especially like talking about the rod business where, I think that's very, very meaningful. I think that's going to have to be a huge part of your success moving forward because, that's what we want to know when we're formulating buying decisions is I'm spending my hard-earned dollars on this. Where did it come from? Well, I mean, you got about as good of a team as could ever be put together for, collaborating on building the best rods. So that's pretty serious.
Yeah. You said it, you said it perfectly. How do you successfully, manage, a lot of different things when you can't be everywhere. I mean, and it is delegating. I mean, one of the mottos that I live by is the greatest strategic advantage is teamwork, because it's powerful and it is actually pretty rare. So I can't do any of this stuff without, a great team, whether it's a day job and all my reps underneath me, or it's JT and my staff and my general manager, my assistant managers. My wife is super involved in the business, and it's really trusting and delegating and utilizing the strength of a team as a force multiplier. Take that same philosophy into tournament angling, and we keep our circle small, but we trust each other, and it's teamwork. We go to practice and we know that everybody is trying to win and they're doing it for the greater good of the team. So it all comes back down to that strength of a really, really good team culture.
We'll have to do this again, Joe. I really do appreciate everything though. So let's sign this off. We'll tackle some other topics next time, but where can people find you? Where can people find your content? What are some things that you could promote to us right now?
Yeah. So the best way to learn about our rods is through our website, which is JTODP. So it's JT Outdoor Products abbreviated .com. So that's our web address. And then we do a lot of stuff on Facebook. You can learn a lot there, and you can follow along just by going to our Facebook page, which is JT Outdoor Products. We also have a YouTube channel where we share a lot of educational pieces. So you can follow us on there. And then on my personal page, I just at Joe Bricco, talk a lot about all of my careers, whether it's building the gun range or my last tournament win or doing the hockey thing with the daughters and coaching them. And so there's those are the resources where you can find all that.
There it is, man. There it is. I feel like that's a good wrap for our first one.